Gopal Agarwal?
Yes, Maharaj. I've got 2 hours with the tapes and some pictures. The room prop I'd stayed in and the Y and the apartment where Gopal lived.
Oh. Have you made copies of those tapes?
I've got copies. They're also with me.
I can have.
You can have all four.
Four tapes?
Copies. Two hours with the tape and then two copies.
So it's very wet down here.
Yes.
And the path is very small. The path is hard.
Let's walk somewhere else.
They want to get wet.
I walk along the Sky Hill too. Anybody's in Philadelphia? Yes.
Have you been with him in Philadelphia?
No.
I was just wondering, Maharaj, if you had heard from Yasoda Dulal in from England. I was there, and he told me that when he and Tribhuvanath were in India, they went to Mathura, Gaudiya Math. And Tribhuvanath didn't know what he had, but Yasoda Dulal translated Bengali. And there's quite a bit of wealth of material. There was a lot of Srila Prabhupada's early material from the League of Devotees.
Who's Yasoda Dulal?
He's a devotee in England. He's mainly in the Berry Place. He's very young, but a very bright devotee. And Jayatirtha Maharaj is thinking of having him go to Mayapur to learn Bengali and Sanskrit and come back and teach Gurukul there. He's been learning for about 3 or 4 years now. He's doing very, very well, actually. He's translated a number of the writings. I urge him to get in touch with you because there's quite a bit of very interesting things. And Bahusar, I know, could use a lot of this material for his research in India. So I told him it was very important. Bhagavat saw the material, too, that he had translated and was very impressed by it. Quite some interesting things. One of the things he translated was the Radha Krishna's commentary.
What's your name?
All right.
Did you get my letter?
Yes, I did. I was going to write you back.
Okay. There were maybe more things, but sometimes it's very complicated to get Xerox.
But I appreciate it up there. Mm. It was very nice. I showed Paramananda. He was trying to get money from some foundation or something, some Gandhi foundation. Mm. But it was the concept of Gita Nagari. It's very nice.
Good.
Who can I write to get a copy of the Light of the Bhagavad from? Do you know who I...
Well, as I said to you, they're publishing it every month in the...
Yeah, the
Vrijabhas.
Maybe I could like it from them.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Mother Dana? Dana? Can you come up here? Oh, I thought you, when I saw the other paper there, I thought you hadn't written this. This is how you came to Krishna consciousness? And
that's on the Bhagavad Gita class in college, and I sort of combined some from the initiation question about how are you convinced of the Krishna conscious philosophy, because that's how I came to Krishna consciousness.
Huh.
But that's mostly about
and can this compare how they teach... How they teach in college and how...
Right, and Krishna conscious philosophy and the flaws of academic speculation.
Mm. So your father just died?
Yes, he just left his body.
When was that?
About 4 weeks ago. Mm.
Boy's father just died, his devotee Lolium, just the other day. We were talking all about it yesterday morning. So, although both you and Bhakta Dikki were recommended for initiation, I wanted to follow an objective standard of being in the temple uninterrupted 6 months. And did they tell you that?
Maharaj told me after Mangalarti.
It shouldn't mean that much, because it'll just be a few months, there'll be some other initiation. I pointed out to Bhakta Dikki that no matter how good one is doing, so one could say, well, why wait the required time? This person is completely convinced of Krishna consciousness or is doing very good service. In your case, Rabindra Sarup was saying how you were convinced. So the one factor that I mentioned was that only time can show steadiness. It's the quality of time. That not only I look good to my authorities for these 3 months or these 4 months, but when time passes, I'm still here, I'm still steady. There's nothing else that can prove that except that the passage of time, that faithfulness. It's like if somebody comes one day and professes great faithfulness, well, we just say, well, all right, let us see. One day would have to be called maybe faithful, maybe infatuation, maybe this, maybe that.
I want to serve the spiritual master eternally. I can wait a few months.
Actually, Maharaj, I didn't speak with Gopal Agarwal so much as his wife.
Sally?
Yeah. And just to do know, Maharaj was telling me that Prabhupada looked on her as his daughter. She even mentioned that herself. She had quite a lot of reminiscences about the subject.
Could she understand that he was a great soul?
A little bit. And of course not at the time.
Very hard. In the beginning, even his disciples, they didn't know what he was, but they were attracted to him. That sometimes when we remember the special sweet feeling of the relationship when we first met Srila Prabhupada, it's partly made of that. That it's not that we would saw him surrounded by hundreds of devotees, or advertised as what he is, Jagat Guru, foremost authority, author of many books, but that without knowing, we were attracted. That's a real quality of love. In a different way, Krishna surrounds himself with pure devotees like that in Krishna Loka, who don't actually know or don't actually care. They don't interrogate him. Are you actually God? Can you tell us how you have all the characteristics of Bhagavan? But they think that maybe he didn't even do the things that he obviously did. before their eyes, because those things are too great, and Krishna is just a boy. How could he have lifted the Govardhan Hill? So, Srila Prabhupada, he was the most kind person. And exactly what Vedic knowledge was, we weren't sure, but he was, just even in the beginning. Beginning means you're not sure what's ahead. But even in the beginning, he would answer things so convincingly and with such authority that you become attracted to his kindness, attracted to his authoritative knowledge, his intimate knowledge of Krishna. One devotee was, Upendra was telling me his first meeting with Prabhupada. He said he began to speak immediately so much of Krishna as if it were some very good friend of his back in India. If he didn't know who was Krishna. It's so definite knowledge of Krishna. Some people say that, well, when Srila Prabhupada began speaking, he didn't speak in the beginning much about Krishna. He spoke in terms of the absolute truth. But now that these tapes have come out, we see that's not true. You listen to the tape, March 1966, he's talking all about Krishna. So we're automatically attracted to his talking about Krishna. Compassion, individual concern, kindness, great knowledge. So whether he was this or that, we didn't know, except we were attracted in the beginning.
A lot of disciples toward Srila Prabhupada, the most magnanimous and loving personality they've ever met. So that was the beginning of their attraction. They see something most unusual from any of their experiences.
Yes.
Mrs. Agarwal also mentioned this. She was very much attracted and felt a great love for him, just like a daughter. Every day he'd come, and after a few days he was cooking a feast for the whole family at lunch. She'd help him make the preparations, played with her son. She described one story of how Prabhupada was in ecstasy when the boy took his first steps. He was about a year old, and he was holding him. Prabhupada was holding him by his hands like this. Uh-huh. And she has a picture. He has one of those smiles when he's from ear to ear.
Do you have that?
She has the picture. She's looking for the negative.
Uh-huh.
She's going to either send us the picture or the negative. She finds the negative.
Oh, boy.
She's also looking for letters. She used to correspond with Prabhupada after he left there and before he opened up the New York temple.
Hmm.
There may be more stories she remembers, too, in the future.
Uh-huh. You're going to see her again?
Yes. Even in those days, Prabhupada had a strict schedule. He was translating about 8 hours a day. In the morning, he would leave the Y about 7 o'clock, and he'd arrive at their house around 7:15, between then and 7:30, and he'd prepare a little cereal, and he'd take that after Mr. Agarwal left for work. And then about 45 minutes later, he'd begin preparations for lunch, and he'd make chapatis and dal, some vegetable. He really liked frozen vegetables. He was the convenience of it all in the little bag in the refrigerator. Prepare rice and the vegetables. And then 11:30 he'd take lunch and he'd go back to the Y, and from 1 to 5 he'd translate. And then return to the house and he'd speak from about 6 to 9 with guests and answer questions.
Guests were coming?
Yes, she said 10 or 12 guests. And she said she didn't try She tried to have them every other night so it wouldn't be too crowded, but it was even more frequent than that. Almost every night. The first day after his arrival there, he went to the newspapers in Pittsburgh, and there was an interview, but no article. And then the next day, he went to the Butler newspaper, and there was that article that resulted that we know from that. Mm. The name of the man who sponsored him, Agarwal's father from India. I don't know if you've gotten that yet or not.
You can give it to me.
They said it was arranged quite by accident that Mr. Agarwal's father used to always send him papers having to do with some kind of business thing. And he just following his father's instructions would sign the papers and send them back to India. So one of the papers that was sent like this was the admission papers for Prabhupada to come. So they signed it and sent it back, and they said without even realizing what we were getting into. And so from the ship on his way over, Prabhupada sent a cable saying, I'm arriving in New York on such and such a day. And he said they got very upset because they only had about 1 week's notice. And this Sadhu was going to arrive. They're very conscious of their social image. There was another very interesting thing. They said Prabhupada traveled, he carried everything in two hands that he had. In his right hand, he described that he had a bundle of cloth with some grains in it that he'd use as like some kind of cereal that he'd prepare in the morning. And in his right hand, he had a little, in his left hand, he'd have a little suitcase about the size of the briefcases we use these days. And he also carried an umbrella. And besides that, he had three trunks full of books that he shipped by truck. But on the bus, he came and everything he carried in his two hands.
That were translated by this devotee Yasoda Dulal that have to do with the early formation of the League of Devotees, what Srila Prabhupada was doing at that time. And also, he translated some very, very wonderful philosophical works. It was very interesting because it shows us how Srila Prabhupada was so uncompromising with Mayavadis. He was very, very intense in his criticism of some of their comments. He wrote a piece about Radha Krishna, a review of the Bhagavad Gita in one of them. And there was a few other pieces. He would berate them for their ideas and their interpretations, you know, saying this is against Vedic conclusions. He was urging many of the other members to take up the preaching mission. For instance, he said he has so many duties to do, but he's supplying income and doing so many other things. It's very, very encouraging. And there's some other letters from some of the other ones that are glorifying Bhaktivedanta. They see Bhaktivedanta, Abhicharan Bhaktivedanta, for his activities for the League of Devotees. His correspondence are included in this journal.
Yesterday, you mentioned that one of your disciples to be for today's initiation, she was brought up in a Vaishnava family, and that this is such an advantage. But for those people that aren't brought up in Vaishnava families, that are coming from bad backgrounds, can they still have the same confidence that, well, I can become completely purified by taking this initiation and engaging in devotional service?
Yeah, they have to be a little desperate in their determination. Just like sometimes a person with a bad, from a bad social or economic background, somehow or other, he manages to go to a top aristocratic school without even having the right prep school and training. So everyone is watching to see whether this upstart will actually be accepted in such aristocratic society. So if he wants to stay at Harvard or something, he has to be very, very scrupulous. And the others, they may, because of their credit already by birth, be a little confident and relaxed. But he has to strive very hard. But if he does so, then it may be that he becomes a better student than any. And it's not held against him, because the real qualities are there. Sincerity, intelligence, especially in Krishna consciousness, tesham satata yuktanam vajatam priti purvakam. Krishna will give the intelligence if one is actually serving. But he has to remember, he pointed out last night about that prayer by Ajamil. Remember his past life. I remember what I was and what I am now. So everything can be used for advantage. In that sense, we see that the Western devotees who spread this movement around the world were in that category. So you can be confident, but not, there's no room for any cockiness, but to be humble. The other prayer by Prahlad, I was drifting into the ways of materialistic, sinful life, but I was saved by my spiritual master, Narada Muni. How could I ever think of not serving him? So for me, who have been saved by my spiritual master, I have to always cling to that relationship, because without that relationship, I am nowhere. Again, that holds true certainly for the person who since birth has been in Krishna consciousness. He is in a better situation, but sometimes he can abuse it. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent his brilliant son to take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Gaurakishore said, I can't accept you. You already know so many things. You're a great son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it appeared that he was not taking him for his good qualifications. Not that we should think that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was some kind of arrogant scholar. But because of the external situation, Gaurakishore was a little hesitant to take such a qualified person, and he was simply, he put himself as very humble and illiterate. Because you can't be overqualified before the spiritual master. So if you think like that, well, I've already been trained so nicely, what is the need of a spiritual master? And that won't hold you in good keeping. Or I'm already saved, I don't have to take initiation, I don't have to follow all these rules, I'm so advanced. But one who has come late, he knows except for the sadhana, except for the spiritual master's direct mercy, there's no chance. he doesn't think, he can't think, that it's due to my pious standing that I've come. So often devotees used to ask Srila Prabhupada, how is it that we were so fallen, we were able to receive this great mercy? He would say, it is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, the most fallen. So you can stand very strong, even coming late. But that doesn't mean that you don't feel those effects also too. It's better to have come. One time I was walking with Srila Prabhupada in Boston. We went past a store and they had these battleships, toy battleships and other toys like that. So I asked them, I said, these are the kind of toys we played with, whereas we know that you played with Radha Krishna. Does this make a difference for us now? He said, yes, it has its effect. Again, if we are desperately determined, then we'll stay despite this effect. We have to be so alert. But we should be glad that the new generations coming are trained like that. This is another proof that Srila Prabhupada's mercy didn't stop with him. That only those who were his disciples were fortunate. Rather, we see the future generations are more fortunate. They're being born in families of his devotees. And then the future families of his devotees. They'll become, as the society becomes more organized spiritually, then the future generations will be more fortunate. We should go back. There's no doubt that someone like Lalita, Rabindrasarup's daughter, is fortunate. Eating prasadam, chanting Hare Krishna all these years. If we say that since I've been a devotee 10 years, 12 years, and we count it as an opulence somehow that we've been able to be a devotee, someone says, you were one of the first devotees, yet one of these children, they're 10 years old and they've been a devotee 10 years. And their brains are not damaged. Even if you took some drugs or this or that, Krishna consciousness is transcendental. But we see devotees who did so much damage to themselves that they're struggling.
Question about the workings of karma, I'm a little trouble understanding. Like, we know that somebody's born wealthy or in an educated or opulent family by their past pious activities. So that means they must have done something pious, but yet, like, today you see many very, very wealthy people, like there's supposed to be a lot of devotees talking about the great Rockefeller conspiracy. Or there are many, many wealthy people or opulent people who are actually very demoniac in their mentality. They're not very charitable anymore, and they seem just contrary to this. So I wonder, how is it that they can be do pious activities in their previous life and possess such a hellish mentality now?
Well, whatever, there are four material opulences: good birth, beautiful body, education, and wealth. So, as a result of pious activities, you're born with those things. And that's your result of pious activities. But it may be that there's nothing else pious except having been given those things. Your, the parents, they may be already corrupted by association with those material things. Therefore, Queen Kunti prays that if one is on the path of trying to improve himself in terms of those four material opulences, which do come as a result of pious activities, then he'll never attain the favor of Krishna, who is Akinchana Gochara. He likes people who are materially exhausted. So it's a kind of a reverse blessing. Especially in this age, people don't know how to use these things for Krishna. Formerly, with the atmosphere more pious, if one was wealthy, he would spend for Krishna. his education would be used for Krishna. So I may get those things by pious activities, but then my parents, they're already become corrupted, so they corrupt me. And the old misuse is that because I have a lot of money, I simply drive around in a car and take life easy and enjoy sense gratification. And that's, so it's misused in this age. Whereas it's meant to be that I don't have to fight hard day and night to try to eke out my existence and prevent starvation. Therefore, I can meditate, think about Krishna consciousness and higher values. That's supposed to be the advantage.
So actually, these charitable acts are just sentiment. They're not really a permanent feature or education of the spirit soul, really.
What charitable acts?
Well, opening hospital, for example, things that will bring one
no,
some.
No, they're no good. Actually, if I give charity to someone for material purposes, it seals my doom. I must come back in the next life. In this way, charity is a curse, or pious acts are a curse, because you know, you've heard of the law that if you give to a pure Brahmin, the money comes back so many times, a half-educated Brahmin, it comes back so many times. So that means that if I give somebody $200, in my next, I have to be born in the next life and get that $200 back from him. You can say, well, good, I get $200. Yeah, you get $200, but you get repeated birth, death, disease, and old age. And you must come back. Just as if you put money in the bank with interest, then in 10 years, if you go to withdraw the money, they'll give you $300. Whether you like it or not, it's accrued. So whether you like it or not, for doing charity, you have to be born again. So one, if I make a nice charitable act, then I'm finished. I have to come back and get the so-called good result. That if, sometimes it's said that if you give money for a hospital, then in your next life, you'll never be in need of medical care. You'll be taken care of. Well, what good is that? That I have to come back and get cancer, but I don't have to worry about the hospital bill. I don't want to come back. Or if you give blood, then you have to get the blood back. So we should only yajnartha kamano yacha loko yam kama bandana. Just give and just work, or yad karosi yad ashnas. Just give to Krishna, and then it won't be karma. One can act in this way and live for many years without getting the result of karma. Otherwise, good karma, we've just been mentioning good karma, but to speak of bad karma. So whether you're born in the Rockefeller or on the worst part of town, somehow the real quality of pious activities is having done some devotional service enough that when pure devotee comes, we are inclined to serve him, to hear the message.
Maharaj, is this required to have previous devotional service to be able to take up spiritual life? Like Vaidhi Bhakti?
No. The only thing that's required is human consciousness, and then the mercy can be given. We've been talking about how if someone from his birth is trained up, he's in a more advantageous position, but yet the other person who's got a bad start, he can make it also as long as he's a human being. Therefore, the same thing. And ultimately, all that's required is that you're still a human being. Then Krishna, of course, not even that's required. Krishna can give his mercy to an animal. But generally speaking, as long as you're a human being, then Srila Prabhupada has written in the Nectar of Devotion how there's a chain of pious activities. Interest in devotional service doesn't just spring up, that it does require a path. But then he says, but anyway, if one somehow is attracted to books like the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, an inclination. So the rule is there, but Krishna's mercy isn't bound to the rule. Oh, I can't give you mercy. That's what the Hindus say. They say that you people, you Westerners, you take to Krishna consciousness. If you perfect it in your next life, you'll be born as a Hindu. They think that's the furthest we can go because of the rule and the law. But they don't know that the transcendental law of Krishna's mercy, that transforming a person, as you transform bell metal into gold by a mixture of mercury, a person can become brahmana by association with a pure devotee. That same argument, they say, you are born in the mlecha body, so your karma is that you are mlecha. If you perfect love of God, your next life you can be born a brahmana. So the argument is that I've changed my body already during this life. I've already changed my body in every way. By every 7 years, the body completely changes. I've been taking prasadam 7 years. It's a different body. Krishna conscious. My consciousness is different. Everything is different. How can you say I haven't changed my body during this lifetime? Therefore, I don't have to be born in the so-called Hindu family and smoke and eat meat and worship 10 demigods.
Did Srila Prabhupada ever comment about devotees of ISKCON ever having past association with Lord Chaitanya's movement? Comment?
Past. I remember in the beginning, I was typing his letters and he said like that. He mentioned some of the devotees and said, actually, you were members of Lord Chaitanya's movement previously. He may have conditioned it by saying, you may have been members of Lord Chaitanya's party previously, working with Lord Chaitanya. Now, the Sankirtan movement is here in the West. You've come again to help. The special associates to perform this mission whenever it has to be done. So he said that.
So there are some devotees who are taking birth in this movement because they have a particular function to fulfill with Lord Chaitanya's plan?
That's the apparent secret, yes. But it doesn't matter. Either one is like that or he's not like that. He can become siddha, perfect. Just like the gopis, some of them are eternal associates, and some when Krishna came, they were recruited by him, not being in that status. But once in that status, they're all perfect.
Sankirtan, we may approach everyone, but only some people will take a book and give a donation. Does that depend on any previous pious activities or devotional service?
Different things are working. The super soul is there in your heart and in his heart, according to your sincerity. Of course, that's why those who are very proficient at book distribution, they can distribute more books. Krishna's giving them the intelligence, and somehow or other, the super soul within that person is being moved. Is moving that person. So, super soul is acting in both cases. We know that if someone has some pious background, then when the spiritual master comes, Krishna tells him in the heart, yes, this is the person. You can surrender to this person. So it may be that when a devotee, disciple of the spiritual master, approaches somebody, he sees the book, then he thinks, or Krishna makes him think, yes, remember you wanted this. Like that. Or it may be that I am so surrendered, so enthusiastic that Krishna sees I'm struggling, I must distribute these books. And then Krishna gives us so much intelligence that we can influence the people. He said that about himself. He said, when I began to speak, I was not a very bold speaker. But if you're sincere, Krishna gives you the intelligence. Actually, Srila Prabhupada once called this a miracle. We were talking about the yogis who make gold and how people worship them as God. He was saying, actually, there's a certain material secret to it. You just drink some liquid mercury and it mixes with your stool, or it mixes in your system, and then when you pass stool, gold comes out. We were walking. Garga Muni was on that walk. Prabhupada used to call him Garga Money, because he was always interested in money. So he became very enlivened to hear that. He said, Prabhupada, can we do this? He said, yes, but the thing is, you have to swallow mercury. That if an ordinary man does that, he'll die. So don't try this. Just to make some gold. Otherwise, everyone could be making gold in this way. But, I got my point.
Sankirtan, how they turn swami.
Oh, yeah. So he said, that's not a miracle. He said, the real miracle is, and he had just heard some Sankirtan results, how they're distributing so many books. Because these books, he said, they're actually, by ordinary standards, it is very dry subject matter, religious books. Who has ever heard of so many religious books being bought? Heavy philosophical book on religion, Srimad Bhagavatam. So that they're able to distribute so many books, that's Krishna's miracle. It's a fact. The only books that sell that many are all these nonsense bestsellers. No book publisher would expect to sell many Srimad Bhagavatams with the Sanskrit and everything. We even pointed out, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes people, they look at these books and they don't want to buy them, they say, even though they appreciate it, the common man says, oh, this is very heavy, I couldn't understand, this is over my head. You see, what's this language? Now this is Sanskrit language. Oh, this is over my head, this is very deep. He said, yes, it's a fact. The Srimad Bhagavatam is very deep and only a few men can understand it. But nevertheless, such books are being sold in hundreds and thousands. That's a miracle by the empowered book distributors.
Becoming an empowered book distributor.
Empowered means trusted by Krishna. It's like Shaktavish Avatar is a jiva, but he's a jiva who's been empowered with great opulence to do Krishna's work. So, Krishna's not going to empower someone who's questionable, who'll misuse the power, ruin his reputation, and not do the work. So if somebody is shown by sincerity, surrender, that he wants to be such an agent, empowered devotee, of course, Krishna can empower anyone. But he'll give that power to the person that he understands will use it in his service. This is the key to our movements growing, influential in the world. That Krishna, he could empower this movement to take over the world. But he wants to see that actually, if we took over, that we would actually implement Varnashram Dharma and in all humility, not become tyrants. It could give us the world immediately. So, he gave the example that just like big businesses, they hire advertising firms And they spend millions of dollars every year. They don't resent it. They know that it is a good money well spent. Even Srila Prabhupada used to talk about this horse cigarette. Horse cigarette is Marlboro, because everywhere you see this big advertising. So they wouldn't be doing this horse advertising, cowboy, unless they were getting the good results. So our position is, we're advertisers also, an advertising agency, Sankirtan Movement, advertisers for Lord Krishna and his Lord Krishna and company. We are advertising, chanting Hare Krishna, telling people, please take to Krishna, here's some literature. Advertising firm. So Krishna has to pay us in terms of letting us become empowered, or giving us facility. If he thinks that this advertising firm will actually do his mission credit, then he will definitely pay and empower us. You're actually going to spread my glories? All right, here's ability.